Hi, this is Ruth McCauley. So very happy to be returning to the air with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, January 28th. We begin with a front page article under the government and politics column, plans emerge to fund higher education. This is an article written from Springfield by Springfield Bureau Chief for the Decatur Herald and Review, Dan Petrella. The State House has competing plans to deal with funding crisis facing higher education in Illinois. Because Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and the Democratic-controlled General Assembly haven't been able to agree on a budget for the fiscal year that began July 1st, public universities and community colleges across Illinois haven't received any state funding. Likewise, the state hasn't funded grants to help low-income students at public and private colleges cover the cost of tuition. Just this week, Eastern Illinois University President David Glassman notified the campus community of immediate cuts to expenditures such as equipment purchases and warned of potential layoffs and furloughs if the situation continues. Against that backdrop, an Illinois House committee approved a bill Wednesday that would appropriate more than $397 million for monetary award program grants and send nearly $325 million to community colleges. However, it does not address funding for public universities. Meanwhile, Republicans in the House and Senate have introduced bills in both chambers that would fund MAP grants and community colleges as well as public universities, although schools would be funded at reduced levels. The plans, sponsored by Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington, whose district includes Illinois State University, and Senator Dale Ryder of Mattoon, who represents Eastern, are tied to a proposal that would give the governor the authority to move money around within the state budget to cover shortfalls. They said the plans have the governor's support. Brady sits on the House Higher Education Committee, which approved the MAP grant and community college funding bill without any Republican votes. He said he voted against the bill because it doesn't include a way to pay for the appropriations and doesn't deal with funding for universities. This bill, with all the good intentions, is not sustainable in funding right now, Brady said, adding that it will face a likely veto from Rauner if it passes both chambers. Democratic Representative Kelly Burke of Evergreen Park, who chairs the committee, said that higher education is a critical service and noted that Comptroller Leslie Munger would have the authority to prioritize payments for MAP grants and community colleges if the bill is approved. Brady and Ryder said their bills would offer a more comprehensive approach. Both would spend about $1.7 billion, to fund universities at 80% of what they received in fiscal year 2015 and community colleges at 90%. MAP grants would be fully funded at 2015 levels. That would all be contingent on giving the governor more authority to move money around to fill budget gaps. We may not have $1.7 billion, so someone is going to have to make sure that the most critical areas don't run out of money, Ryder said. Someone has got to be minding the shop, and if the General Assembly is not going to do it, then the governor needs to be allowed to do it. Rauner's administration has previously said that the state needs to, quote, cut waste, root out cronyism, improve outcomes, and achieve savings, end quote, in higher education, and that funding should be tied to spending reductions or cost-saving reforms to avoid triggering a cash flow crisis. A more local interest story follows. Survey information helps more homeless get housing. H&R senior writer Teresa Churchill's story from Decatur. The people conducting the annual census today of the Decatur area's homeless population are taking names and phone numbers. They're also, for the first time, asking for more details on other members of the surveyee's household as part of a push by the Homeless Council Continuum of Care to get better information about the homeless so agencies serving them can get a roof over more of their heads. This year's point-in-time survey began at 12:01 a.m. and will continue to be taken until midnight on the street where homeless people are known to congregate and at such places as the Decatur Public Library, Heritage Behavioral Health Center, Crossing Healthcare, and Senator Severn's Transit Center. It is conducted by Dove Incorporated employees, homeless shelter staff, and volunteers from the community. Mary Garrison, professor of social work at Millikan University and survey coordinator for the second consecutive year, told volunteer census takers during training that the additional information is not for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, but for local use. Even so, Dan O'Loughlin and Ingrid Smith were among trainees expressing concern about how successful they'll be at getting it. A lot of people don't want to give their names, O'Loughlin said. Smith added that some people are even hesitant about giving their initials, which is all they've been asked for in the past, and not because they felt ashamed. They do not want you in their business, she said. Garrison said, having nothing but initials makes it harder to eliminate duplicate surveys. She also said names would help the Continuum's new Chronic Homelessness Action Team, which is tracking the chronically homeless to learn what works and what doesn't work and getting them off the street. If they balk at giving their name, okay, we're not going to press it, Garrison said. We'll take their initials. HUD defines chronically homeless as those living in a place not meant for human habitation, a safe haven, or in an emergency shelter for at least a year or at least four separate occasions over the previous 3 years that add up to 12 months or more. The 2015 point in time identified 220 homeless people, 74 of whom were chronically homeless. Jeff Mueller and Todd Tuggle, members of the action team, believe the actual number of chronically homeless in the Decatur area is more than twice that number. Consultant Fred Spanis tried to encourage trainees by saying that other communities asking for names get them more than 90% of the time. The more you value and respect them as a person when you engage them, the more forthcoming they're going to be, Spanish said. Last year, we emerged with a bunch of numbers, but this year, we hope to emerge with a bunch of people we can get housed. Another change in the way today's survey is being conducted is that more emphasis has been placed on census takers filling out the forms and not those being surveyed. Questions about income and health insurance have also been eliminated. At training earlier this month, Garrison introduced volunteers to Millikan student Alec Tooth, an accounting major from Decatur, who, with fellow senior Brock Trader of Riverton, took the lead in creating a database to analyze today's results and compare to results from future surveys. It was a project for a class taught by Assistant Professor Richard Podeschi at the Tabor School of Business. Tooth said it was one of the most difficult databases the class has ever created because it had to be versatile enough to accommodate changes HUD makes every year in the information it requires. This should be better information for you guys, he said. If there's any problems while Mary's students are putting the results in, we will also help. Garrison's students on the project are seniors Addie Smith of Franklin Grove and Kaylee Smith of Macon. We turn now to the local section of the Decatur Herald and Review and have a Crime and Courts article written by Huey Freeman, who's an H&R staff writer. convicted baby killer charged with having sex with Decatur teen. Again, this from Decatur. A 43-year-old Decatur man who previously served 11 years in custody for the brutal murder of an infant girl is in the Macon County Jail on felony charges of aggravated criminal sexual abuse for engaging in sex acts with a 16-year-old female. Emmett J. Rogers, who moved to Decatur shortly after he was released from prison in 2008, was arrested after Decatur K-9 officer Chris Snyder found him in a vehicle with the juvenile female. At 2:29 a.m. January 3rd, Snyder conducted a traffic stop on a car which was driven by the teen. Rogers, whose driver's license is suspended, was a passenger. The officer's suspicions were aroused when the teen and Emmett were both asked separately how they knew each other and for how long, and both gave completely different answers to each question, said an affidavit by Detective Eric Matthews. Matthews subsequently visited Rogers at his apartment in the 700 block of West Prairie Avenue to ask him about his relationship with the juvenile. Emmett stated that he had lied about how he knew the juvenile when asked by officers, Matthews wrote. Emmett said he approached the juvenile in the summer of 2015 while she was walking the streets, believing her to be a prostitute. He said he propositioned the juvenile to engage in sexual intercourse with him in exchange for money, and she agreed. During that encounter, he paid her $10 for sex acts, Rogers told police. Rogers told police he engaged in sex acts with the teen on about 20 or 30 occasions. He said he would mostly pay the juvenile $5 to $10 for the sexual acts, but sometimes would bring her food or snacks as payment instead. Rogers admitted that he suspected that the juvenile was 16 years old. The teen told police Emmett knew she was 16 years old during the time they were engaging in sexual acts because she had previously told him her age. Rogers, who is being held on $150,000 bond, is due in court for his preliminary hearing February 10th. Rogers was convicted of first-degree murder in 2000. He confessed to breaking the leg of 3-month-old Jamila Williams and hitting her on the head as hard as he could because she was crying, and he was angry at her 18-year-old mother for not returning to their Centerville home from a card game on November 7, 1996. The baby's skull was fractured. A judge sentenced him to 20 years in prison. The leniency of the sentence created an outcry by law enforcement officials. Then Centerville Police Chief Curtis McCall said the judge was way off base in his decision, said a newspaper account. A former detective called it the worst child abuse case he ever saw. In another article by Huey Freeman in the Crime and Courts Arena, the article with the headline, Police Find Parolee with Crack Cocaine During Raid. Darius Gaddy, 27, of Decatur, is being held in jail on a $100,000 bond after police found him with 53 crack cocaine rocks during a raid on his East Side residence and had to wrestle him into handcuffs after a taser failed to subdue him. About 5:20 p.m. Tuesday, members of the Decatur Police Street Crimes Unit and Emergency Response Team executed a search warrant at the house in the 800 block of East Prairie Avenue. As they entered, officers loudly and repeatedly announced, "Police search warrant, everyone get on the ground," said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Brent Morey. When Gaddy was spotted in the living room, officers told him to get on the ground, but he did not comply. Darius was drive stunned by, I don't know what drive stunned means, but drive stunned by a taser, which had little or no effect, Morey wrote in his statement. When officers tried to handcuff him behind his back, he tensed his arms and attempted to pull his arms away. Gaddy received several straight punches to the upper back that enabled officers to detain him. As Gaddy lay on the floor, narcotics detectives found in his pocket a baggie containing numerous individually packaged white rock-like substances weighing a total of about 7 grams. Gaddy, who was convicted of possession of a controlled substance in 2006 and sentenced to 2 years in prison, was most recently released from prison on March 2nd after serving part of a 3.5-year sentence for aggravated battery in a public place. About 11:15 p.m. on Monday, May 4th, 2013, a 56-year-old man was walking on the sidewalk of the 2500 block of East William Street when Gaddy jumped out of a vehicle and grabbed him from behind. Gaddy threw the man to the ground, struck him in the mouth with a hard object, causing a split lip and profuse bleeding. On July 3, 2013, Gaddy pleaded guilty to aggravated battery in a public place as part of a plea deal in which a charge of aggravated battery of a police officer was dismissed. He is due in circuit court for his arraignment on his most recent charges by Wednesday, and I would assume that's Wednesday of next week. In a different article, from Mount Zion, convention business stays consistent for Mount Zion. This is an article written by Ryan Voiles. More weddings, corporate events, and rentals added up to a pretty good year for the Mount Zion Convention Center. Village's officials said they were pleased with the performance of the center as the annual year-end report showed that the number of overall bookings last year were up by 7 from the previous year. There were 40 weddings and receptions booked for Fletcher Park and the Convention Center in 2015. Aside from weddings, there were 4 fundraising events, 79 one-time events, and 59 long-term or 12-month rentals. For events coordinator Kelly McCourt Edwards, the numbers are a sign of consistency that could lead to greater things. That could come in weekly rentals that fill in the empty space during the weekdays. Last year was an important step for the center, McCourt said, as they were able to get companies such as Archer Daniels Midland Company, Tate and Lyle, and Ameren Illinois to book events. Officials were also pleased with an increased number of bookings at Fletcher Park, which has been part of an overall plan to tap into what McCourt sees as a previously underutilized asset for the village. There were 81 park rentals in 2015, up from 77 in 2014. Park use pushes include Let's Party at the Park, during which people can host weddings, parties, or any other gatherings at Fletcher Park. One thing that McCourt and others have begun to mull over is the idea of a nonprofit group or committee that could help secure additional sources of cash to fund big events. Village Administrator Julie Miller points to the 2014 sold-out show at the center that featured comedian Jim Belushi and his comedy troupe as something the village could do more of in the future. But the cost for such acts is not cheap, and it took a number of sponsors to pay the $15,000 booking fee for Belushi. There's an interest to do more of that here, but it has to make sense and be possible financially, Miller said. McCourt said those that are interested in helping the village with ideas or would want to sit on the committee are asked to contact the village hall at 217-864-5424. McCourt also said the idea for the center has never been to create a revenue driver. The idea was never to be a moneymaker, but to improve quality of life in the area, she said. Our next article is written by Allison Petty, and this is from Decatur. Little Critters Help Kids Learn Soccer Basics. How do you teach 3 and 4 year old children the basics of soccer? Take them to Puppy Town, USA. That's the setting of a storybook used by the Mid-State Soccer Club's Little Critters program, which introduces the kids to characters such as Brittany Penguin and Susie Snake, who help them learn various skills. Soccer supervisor Eric Jamison helped his father, former professional soccer player Steve Jamison, write the book in 2004. Parents receive a printable copy through email. While kids that age can only pay attention for a limited time, the lessons are just 30 minutes each week, Jamison said it's surprising how much they can retain, especially when they have fun. They're going to learn more probably right here than at any other age group. It's really almost like we're tricking them into doing it, he said. The program maxes out at 45 children in the winter months when it is held in the Decatur Indoor Sports Center, but can top 60 kids during the summer. Coaches lead the children through games and a journey to meet their new friends in Puppy Town. Colin Bonner, the Mid-State Director of Coaching, said kids who take part in the Little Critters program often come to the club's youth soccer league ready to participate. We try and teach them basics, but really we just want them to use their imagination, work in a group with other kids, keep their hands to themselves, that kind of stuff, he said. Have fun and be silly. Because the Mid-State youth programs are held on Mondays, Mary Sullivan found it convenient to bring her 3 kids to try out a new sport. Georgia, 4, Beatrice, 6, and Oscar, 9, enjoyed the first lesson so much that they were disappointed when they had to wait a week to come back, Sullivan said. Even though some kids Oscar's age have been playing for years, Sullivan said he wasn't left behind. In fact, he loved the first lesson. It makes it nice that they have a program he can ease into and not feel self-conscious about, she said. The program has been a good fit for Jessica Bagley's children, 4-year-old Addison and 3-year-old Cody. Although Addison is a little bit more timid, Bagley said the coaches built her up and held her hand. And now she doesn't need her hand held. They have worked her up, Bagley said. They take the time to do that with the kids. Here's some pictures, fun pictures, along with this article. I'm sorry you're unable to see them, but kids jumping around and having a great time amid some soccer balls inside the indoor. The Decatur Indoor Sports Center. Looks like fun. We turn now to the Decatur Tribune and pick up some news from here and there. The first item, a Macon County Conservation District begins its 50th anniversary celebration. From its beginning in 1966 through today, the Macon County Conservation District has been made possible by a wide variety of people and groups working together to support the natural areas and historic sites of Macon County. 50 years ago this year, the residents of Macon County voted to form the Conservation District. As part of its 50th anniversary celebrations, the Macon County Conservation District has opened an exhibit, 50 Years of Conservation, at Rock Springs Nature Center. The exhibit reflects on the history of the Conservation District, the people instrumental to its development, and major milestones along the way. The exhibit will be on display for the entire year, says Program Services Manager Jeff Tisch. But be sure to visit it more than once because components of it will change as the months go by. We're very proud of what the Conservation District has become over the years, says Executive Director Paul Marion. In addition to the exhibit, we are looking forward to more special events later this year. Admission to the exhibit and Rock Springs Nature Center is free. Visitors can view it in the North Exhibit Hall during the Nature Center's open hours on Monday through Wednesdays, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., on Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and on Sunday from 1 to 5. For more information about the Macon County Conservation District and its events, visit www.maconcountyconservation.org. Rock Springs Nature Center is located on the southwestern edge of Decatur. To get to Rock Springs from Decatur, go south on Route 48 and turn west onto Rock Springs Road, or go south on Wickles Road and turn east onto Rock Springs Road. Watch for signs. Plenty of parking is available. I think we have time for the next item here. No, maybe not. We're heading back over here to the Decatur Herald and Review to pick up some local briefs. First, the bridge on Nevada Road in Pleasant View Township, just north of Macon County Highway 32 and south of Bethel Road, has been permanently closed due to structural deficiencies. That's important to know. Appointments for the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program will be made starting at 7 a.m. on Friday, that's tomorrow, January 29th, in the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary Anderson Plaza. Applicants are asked to park in the lot across the street from the Civic Center. Appointments will also be made by telephone Friday, starting at 8:30 a.m., by calling 217-428-2193. No calls will be taken at the Civic Center. The program is administered by Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corporation. Appointments will be issued on a first-come, first-served basis until all slots are filled. Eligible low-income homeowners may apply for emergency furnace assistance by calling the Weatherization Program at 217-422-2075 or 428-2193. Ballroom dance class will be offered for 6 weeks, beginning 6:30 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, February 4th, in South Shores Christian Church at 230 Bristol Drive. The cost is $60 for couples and $33 for singles. Call for more information, 217-853-8964. The History Museum is closed. The Macon County History Museum will remain closed until Tuesday, February 23rd, for work on construction projects and the archives. Two representatives of Thrivent Financial will speak at the next monthly meeting of the Human Service Agency Consortium at noon Thursday, February 4th, in Central Christian Church, 650 West William Street. The public is invited to attend, but lunch is available to HSAC members only. Attendees are welcome to bring a lunch or not eat at all. Okay, we're out of time for the first half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, January 28th. Hang tight, we'll be back in just a moment after this quick break.